Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Archery's podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. Where Good Ideas Come, From the Natural History of Innovation, is Stephen Johnson's popular science and innovation studies account of how breakthroughs emerge across nature, technology, science, and culture. Rather than treating invention as the product of solitary genius or sudden inspiration, Johnson argues that ideas usually develop through connected environments, long incubation, recombination, and cumulative change. The book draws on examples from evolutionary biology, urban life, scientific discovery, computing, and media history to identify recurring patterns that make innovation more likely. Its purpose is partly explanatory and partly practical. It offers readers a way to understand why some periods, institutions, and communities generate more novelty than others. Johnson's central claim is that creativity is not simply an individual mental event. It is shaped by networks, available tools, prior discoveries, mistakes, and the social conditions that allow partial ideas to meet. The result is a broad, interdisciplinary framework for thinking about innovation as an ecological process. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, The Adjacent Possible explains why inventions emerge from available conditions. One of the book's most important concepts is the adjacent possible, a term Johnson adapts from theoretical biology to describe the set of new possibilities that become reachable from the current state of knowledge, tools, and social practice. Innovation, in this view, does not usually leap into an unlimited future. It moves into nearby rooms opened by earlier discoveries. Gutenberg could combine movable type, paper, ink, and the screw press because those elements already existed in usable form. Similar logic helps explain why multiple inventors often reach comparable breakthroughs at roughly the same time. Once the necessary components and assumptions are in place, many people can see the same next step. This framework shifts attention away from heroic personality and toward timing, infrastructure, and recombination. It also clarifies why some ideas fail when introduced too early. A concept may be imaginative, but not yet supported by the surrounding technical or cultural environment. Johnson's point is not that innovation is inevitable, but that possibility is historically structured. Each new invention expands the boundary of what can be attempted next, creating a branching process in which progress depends on both imagination and the materials already on the table. Secondly, liquid networks make ideas more productive through contact and circulation. Johnson uses the idea of liquid networks to describe environments where ideas can circulate, collide, and recombine without becoming either too rigid or too chaotic. A rigid structure isolates people and disciplines, limiting the number of useful encounters. A structure with no continuity prevents ideas from developing long enough to become valuable. Liquid networks sit between these extremes. They allow movement, conversation, and repeated contact across diverse perspectives. Johnson often points to settings such as cities, coffee houses, laboratories, and collaborative institutions because they place people near different knowledge pools. The value of such networks is not that a crowd magically becomes intelligent. Rather, individuals become more capable when their partial insights connect with the partial insights of others. This argument has practical implications for organizations and creative communities. Innovation is encouraged less by demanding isolated originality and more by designing conditions where informal exchange is normal, disciplinary boundaries are permeable, and unfinished thoughts can be shared without immediate closure. Johnson's emphasis on networks also explains why geographic and institutional clusters matter. They accelerate the flow of fragments that, when combined, can become ideas no single participant could have produced alone. Thirdly, slow hunches challenge the myth of the instant breakthrough. A central corrective in the book is Johnson's treatment of the slow hunch. Popular accounts of creativity often emphasize the sudden eureka moment, as if major ideas arrive fully formed in a flash. Johnson argues that many important innovations begin as incomplete intuitions that need years of preservation, revision, and contact with other ideas. A hunch may be too vague to act on at first, or it may lack the missing piece that would make it operational. Its survival depends on habits and environments that keep it available. Notebooks, archives, conversations, research communities, and institutional memory all matter because they prevent promising fragments from disappearing before they mature. This concept changes how innovation should be managed. If organizations reward only immediate results, they may discard the early forms of their most valuable ideas. Slow hunches require time and interaction, but not passive waiting. They develop when people revisit old questions, expose them to new contexts, and allow other people to add complementary knowledge. Johnson therefore presents creativity as a temporal process. Breakthroughs may look sudden at the moment of recognition, but their foundations are often laid through long, uneven accumulation. Fourthly, serendipity, error, and acceptation turn accidents into usable discoveries. Johnson gives sustained attention to the role of chance, mistake, and repurposing in innovation. Serendipity does not mean mere luck in his account. It means being positioned so that unexpected connections can be noticed and developed. A surprising result is useful only when someone has enough background knowledge and openness to interpret it. Error has a related function. Being wrong can disrupt assumptions and force exploration of paths that a correct but routine process would never reveal. This does not romanticize incompetence. It suggests that controlled tolerance for mistakes can enlarge the search space for discovery. Exaptation adds another layer to this logic. Borrowed from evolutionary theory, it describes a trait or tool developed for one purpose and later adapted for another. In cultural and technological innovation, existing products, methods, or ideas often gain significance when moved into a new setting. These patterns show that innovation is not always a clean sequence from problem to solution. It is frequently an opportunistic process in which mismatches, leftovers, and surprising uses become productive. For Johnson, the practical lesson is to create environments where anomalies are investigated rather than suppressed, and where ideas can cross boundaries between functions and fields. Lastly, platforms and openness allow innovations to compound beyond their origin. The book also examines how platforms make innovation cumulative. A platform is a structure that supports further creation by others, whether it is a biological ecosystem, a city, a scientific method, a communications network, or a technological standard. Johnson is interested in innovations that do not merely solve a single problem, but enable many subsequent experiments. Open platforms are especially powerful because they allow participants to build, modify, and combine without seeking constant permission from a central authority. This connects to his broader argument that ideas benefit from circulation. When knowledge is excessively protected or isolated, fewer people can test its uses or discover unexpected combinations. Johnson does not deny that ownership and competition can motivate invention, but he emphasizes that long-term creativity often depends on shared foundations. The importance of platforms also explains why some breakthroughs have effects far beyond their original design. Once a stable base exists, it becomes easier for others to explore the adjacent possible around it. In this sense, innovation is not only about producing a new object or concept, it is also about creating conditions under which many future ideas can emerge. In conclusion, where good ideas come from is best suited for readers who want a broad intellectual framework for understanding creativity rather than a narrow manual of business tactics. Entrepreneurs, product leaders, educators, researchers, designers, and policy thinkers can all benefit from its account of how environments shape discovery. Its practical value lies in helping readers ask better questions about their own conditions for innovation. Are people exposed to diverse knowledge? Are half-formed ideas preserved? Are mistakes examined? And are platforms open enough for recombination? The book also offers an intellectual benefit by connecting innovation in human culture with patterns from natural history, making invention feel less mysterious and more ecological. Compared with many creativity books that focus on individual habits, personality traits, or inspirational anecdotes, Johnson's work stands out because it analyzes the surrounding systems that make good ideas more likely. It is not a step-by-step playbook, and readers seeking highly specific organizational procedures may need to translate its principles into their own context. Its strength is conceptual clarity across many domains. By replacing the lone genius myth with a model based on networks, slow development, accidents, and shared platforms, the book gives a durable vocabulary for understanding why some ideas arrive, survive, and spread. If you would like to support Stephen Johnson, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.